Davis. You're listening to CKUT
90.3. Prison Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on www.cqut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune in to the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, or on the second Thursday of every month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio or finding help searching for past programs, email prison@cqut.ca.
Listening to the Prison Radio Show here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Candace, and I'm your host for today's show. Today we'll be talking with one of the organizers of an event that is happening tonight at La Deferle. The event is an info night and fundraiser for two anarchists who are currently incarcerated in Spain, Monica Caballero and Francisco Solar. In the interview, we talk about Monica and Francisco, about the waves of arrests in the anarchist scene in Spain, and also about the event tonight. The interview is in French. We'll also be airing an interview with Michael Kimball, a Black gay anarchist prisoner in Alabama. The interview comes to us from the Final Straw Radio in Asheville, North Carolina. And today, we'll start the show with one of the latest pieces from Mumia Abu-Jamal. As many of our listeners know, Mumia has hepatitis C and continues to be denied the health care he needs, as is the case with so many folks inside. On our last show, we spoke about Robert Seth Hayes, who is incarcerated in Florida and who is also ill and being prevented from receiving the treatment he needs. In this piece, Mumia speaks about a new treatment for hep C and the ways in which pharmaceutical companies and the medical industrial complex prioritize profit over patients.
In the last 2 years or so, there's been a revolution in the treatment of hepatitis C. Don't be scared. The word hepatitis means inflammation of the liver. Since 2013, two drugs have come on the market, which boasts of cure rates of between 95 to 99%. For many hepatitis sufferers, this seems like a medical miracle, for cures are actually quite rare in medicine. And most diseases are managed by lifelong units of medications. But in 2013 and 2014, two drugs were cleared by the FDA for hepatitis cures, Sovaldi and Harvoni. But despite these drugs, the prices offered by drug companies had made them unavailable to most of the people who need them. The cost? $1,000. A pill. I said $1,000, a pill. Sovaldi costs $84,000 for a course of treatment. Harvoni, $94,500. A recent report from the Senate Finance Committee determined that the pharmaceutical company Gilead Sciences Incorporated, which actually acquired the drug from another company, set these prices to maximize profits, knowing it would price out tens of thousands, perhaps millions of potential patients. Conversely, a lower price would have made these life-saving drugs available to more patients. The company that actually developed the drug recommended a course price of $36,000. Gilead, more than double the price. Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat, Oregon, a committee member said, The evidence shows the company pursued a calculated scheme for pricing and marketing its hepatitis C drug based on one primary goal, maximizing profit, regardless of the human consequences. The business of medicine, at war with the meaning of medicine. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
The Prisoner Correspondence Project coordinates a direct letter writing program for queer, gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender and transsexual, gender nonconforming, intersex, and two-spirit inmates across Canada.
The Prisoner Correspondence Project seeks to combat the invisibility of prisoner struggle and work in solidarity with sexual minority and gender nonconforming folks behind prison walls. Part of the intention of the project is to confront the ways in which our communities are policed, surveilled, patrolled, and locked up. The project is always looking for non-incarcerated people, a part of these communities, to act as pen pals. For more information, contact queertrans.prisonersolidarity@gmail.com or call 514-848-7585.
This project is about trans and queer communities demanding justice and dignity.
Cinema Politica Concordia and the Concordia Documentary Center present the Quebec premiere of A Syrian Love Story, the latest film by UK filmmaker Sean McAllister, screening on Monday, February 1st at 7 p.m. in room H110 at Concordia University. Filmed over 5 years, A Syrian Love Story charts an incredible odyssey to political freedom and tells the poignant story of comrades and lovers Ragda and Amr as they take on a journey of hope, dreams, and despair for the revolution, their homeland, their family, and each other. The director and one of the protagonists will be in attendance for a post-screening discussion. This event is open to all and admission is by donation. The venue is wheelchair accessible. That's Monday, February 1st at 7 p.m. in room H110, Concordia University, downtown campus. For more information, visit cinemapolitica.org/concordia. This screening is a co-presentation with CKUT.
In 2015, the student movement announced a heated spring, while unions held back until the fall.
Et entre-temps, on continue de couper les programmes publics et de nous appauvrir à la vitesse grand V.
What lessons can we learn from previous strategies?
Quelle direction devraient prendre les mouvements anticapitalistes et sociaux?
Let's think about it together at Klux-Tijen on February 6th, the current state of the social and anti-capitalist movement.
Une journée de discussion et de présentation pour réfléchir et travailler ensemble, au Carrefour Parents-Enfants de midi à 19h. Pour plus d'informations, consultez clac-montréal.net.
A CKUT co-presentation.
And you are still listening to the Prison Radio Show here on CKUT 90.3 FM. The time is currently 11:09 a.m. Up next is an interview with one of the organizers of an event that is happening tonight at La Defelle, which is an anarchist social space in Ashlaga. The event is an info night and fundraiser for two anarchists who are currently incarcerated in Spain. The interview is in French.
Avec Monica Caballero et Francisco Solar. C'est qui sont Monica et Francisco?
Monica et Francisco sont deux anarchistes qui sont présentement incarcérés dans les régimes FIES en Espagne, dans les régimes FIES 3. Ils ont été incarcérés en Espagne il y a 2 ans pour des engins explosifs posés dans la basilique Pilar. Puis c'est ça, ils font face à des charges d'organisation terroriste pour avoir posé des explosifs. Puis ces deux personnes-là ont été arrêtées aussi dans le Caso Bombas au Chili en 2010. Puis ils ont été incarcérés pendant 9 mois, mais finalement ont été relâchés parce que les preuves étaient absurdes. Fait que c'est ça.
Alors, Monica et Francisco sont deux anarchistes qui étaient arrêtés en contexte du Caso Bombas en Chile et maintenant en contexte d'un gros vague de répression en Espagne.
Ouais.
Est-ce que tu peux parler de ces deux contextes, comme en Chile puis aussi en Espagne?
Ouais. En fait, le Caso Bombas, ça vient de l'opération Salamandra. Puis, en fait, c'est le 22 mai 2009, il y a Mauricio Morales qui s'en allait poser une bombe à la gendarmerie royale. Puis, malheureusement, la bombe a explosé sur lui, puis il est décédé. Puis, suite à ça, dans le fond, il y a une grosse opération qui a vu jour parce qu'il essayait de retrouver les complices, dans le fond, de Mauricio. Puis, ce que les flics ont fait, c'est qu'ils ont été, ils ont fait plein de descentes dans différents squats, dans différents domiciles aussi, pour essayer de trouver des preuves. Puis, ils ont arrêté plusieurs personnes, dont Francisco et Monica. Puis, c'est ça, dans le fond, ils ont arrêté, je pense, au total 14 personnes, mais juste 6 personnes ont eu des accusations contre eux, si je ne me trompe pas. Puis, ils ont passé 9 mois en prison, puis après ça, ils ont été relâchés parce qu'en fait, ce que les avocats se sont rendus compte, ce que le juge s'est rendu compte pendant le procès, c'est que c'était vraiment un montage, en fait, là. Il y avait plein de trucs qui n'avaient pas rapport. Les preuves, c'était bidon, c'était absurde. Puis, il y a même eu des montages médiatiques qui ont été faits avec des fausses interviews. Donc, après 9 mois de prison, ils ont été remis en liberté, puis les accusations sont tombées.
Ça, c'est en 2010, 2011.
Ouais, dans le fond, l'opération Caso Bomba a commencé en 2009, puis les gens ont été libérés, si je me trompe pas, en 2012, je crois. Ouais, si je me trompe pas, c'est en 2012. Puis c'est ça, dans le fond. L'État, comme chilien, a essayé de mettre comme les anarchistes comme ennemi public numéro un, dans le fond, comme un ennemi interne, parce qu'avant, il y avait les Mapuche au Chili que c'était comme une cible facile un peu pour l'État, pour ce qui a trait aux lois antiterroristes. Puis là, depuis 2009, en fait, c'est vraiment les anarchistes qui sont ciblés, un peu comme ce qui se passe en Espagne en ce moment, dans le fond. Puis en Espagne, il y a eu l'opération Columna, dans le fond. C'est l'opération dans laquelle Francisco puis Manico ont été arrêtés pour, comme j'ai dit tantôt, la basilique Del Pilar. Puis, suite à ces arrestations-là, dans le fond, avec des charges de participation à une organisation terroriste et de pose explosifs, pendant les années qui ont suivi, il y a eu plusieurs, plusieurs, plusieurs opérations. Il y a eu l'opération Piñata qui a commencé non, c'est l'opération Pandora en premier, c'est ça. Après l'opération Columna qui a eu lieu en 2013, en novembre 2013, où Francisco Manco est arrêté. Après ça, il y a eu l'opération Pandora en décembre 2014, où est-ce que c'est un peu le même truc qu'ils ont fait au Chili, là, dans le fond, ils sont débarqués dans des squats, dans des domiciles aussi. Puis l'idée, c'était vraiment de cibler les anarchistes comme l'ennemi public numéro un, l'ennemi interne numéro un. Fait que, ils ont accusé les gens pour diverses attaques à la bombe qu'il y a eu. Mais faut comprendre, par exemple, que dans l'opération Pandora, il y a même un juge qui a dit que le but de ces arrestations-là, c'était pas nécessairement de cibler les gens pour des attaques précises, mais c'était plus d'arrêter sous forme préventive une structure organisée, soit dans le fond les groupes anarchistes. C'était vraiment ça le but. Puis après ça, il y a eu l'opération Piñata qui a eu lieu en mars 2015. Puis c'est un peu le même principe aussi, là. Les gens, oui, ont été accusés de certains délits commis comme des attaques à la bombe, mais le but en arrière de ça, c'était vraiment de pouvoir leur donner des charges d'organisation terroriste. Encore là, les preuves ne sont pas encore terminées, mais les preuves, ça se tient beaucoup sur de l'absurde, là, genre des t-shirts ou des affiches ou de la littérature. Puis c'est ça, en fait, les gens qui ont été arrêtés dans l'opération Pandora sont reliés aussi au cas de Monica et Francisco, dans le sens où c'était des gens qui étaient très supporteurs de eux. Fait que je pense que l'État espagnol, en fait, essaie de comme neutraliser toute forme de solidarité anarchiste. Puis après ça, il y a eu, après l'opération Pandora Piñata, il y a eu une opération Pandora numéro 2 en octobre 2015, où est-ce que 9 autres personnes ont été arrêtées, mais ils ont été remis en liberté en attente de leur procès. Puis c'est ça, dans le fond, ils ont, dans toutes les opérations qu'il y a eu en Espagne, ils ont essayé de relier ça à un groupe qui s'appelle Grupos Anarquistas Coordinados, qui ont fait une initiative de différents anarchistes qui voulaient juste comme se donner des nouvelles, faire des projets ensemble. Puis ils ont écrit un livre qui s'appelle Contra Democracia, contre la démocratie. Puis dans le fond, dans toutes les opérations, ça revient. Puis l'État essaie de comme condamner les anarchistes, dans le fond, puis dire qu'ils font tous et toutes partie du groupe GAC, en fait, GAC, là, Grupos Anarquistas Coordinados. Puis c'est ça, après Pandora numéro 2, il y a eu aussi une opération ICE. Dans le fond, ça fait pas longtemps, c'est en 2015 aussi, où ils ont arrêté d'autres personnes encore dans le même but, là, avec des accusations d'organisation terroriste. Ouais, en gros, c'est ça, là. Ok, j'ai parlé beaucoup.
Ouais, est-ce qu'il y a d'autres personnes qui restent en prison en Espagne?
Il y a une autre personne en ce moment qui est encore en prison en Espagne. Ils sont trois. Il y a Monica Francisco, ça fait 2 ans qu'ils sont là. Puis il y a un autre gars aussi qui a été, c'est Juan Manuel, qui a été arrêté pendant l'opération ICE.
Ok. Quoi faire les anarchistes en Espagne pour combattre cette répression?
Ben en fait, c'est ça qui est fou, c'est que même si l'État essaie vraiment de répresser là, violemment toute forme de solidarité anarchiste, c'est incroyable toutes les actions qu'il y a eu en solidarité avec les prisonniers anarchistes. C'est incroyable la mobilisation aussi internationale qu'il y a eu à l'entour de ça. Donc je pense que ça peut se voir dans les rues, dans les communiqués, là. C'est comme tout est accessible en ligne, mais je pense que les gens n'arrêtent vraiment pas, puis que pour eux, c'est justement comme une raison de plus, dans le fond, pour lutter, là.
Ok, alors Monica et Francisco ont reçu les charges d'être impliqués avec un groupe terroriste. Qu'est-ce que ça veut dire?
Ouais, ben en fait, je vais faire une petite brève historique, là, puis je pense qu'on ne peut pas parler de loi antiterroriste en Espagne si on ne parle pas du groupe armé ETA, dans le fond, qui est un groupe nationaliste basque, parce que, comme après la dictature de Franco, ben en fait, comme durant la dictature, etc., c'est vraiment l'État, comme ETA, qui combattait violemment, là, comme l'État en général, espagnol. Puis, c'est dans ces moments-là, dans le fond, qu'il y a eu plein de réformes par rapport au code pénal pour rentrer en vigueur les lois antiterroristes. Puis là, si on regarde un peu dans l'histoire, on voit que depuis 2011, l'État a décidé, l'État ETA, pas l'État, a décidé d'arrêter, dans le fond, toute militance. Donc là, moi, mon impression, c'est que là, l'État espagnol est à la recherche d'un ennemi public numéro 2, un peu. Fait que là, ce qu'ils font, c'est qu'ils attaquent les anarchistes. T'sais. Puis, il y a aussi cette vague-là au Chili qui se voit clairement, parce qu'avant, c'était des groupes autochtones également qui luttaient pour l'indépendance de leurs terres. Puis, là, quand ils ont comme commencé à moins lutter un peu, l'attaque s'est vraiment faite de la part des anarchistes. Fait que je ne sais pas si c'est un truc moderne, là, contemporain, mais ouais, les anarchistes sont complètement attaqués et vus comme l'ennemi public numéro 1.
Cet événement de vendredi est une info soirée. Qu'est-ce qui va se passer à l'événement? C'est quoi une info soirée?
Ben, en fait, c'est ça, c'est parce que comme dans la scène anarchiste, comme ces cas-là sont assez connus, mais généralement, c'est pas des trucs desquels on va tant parler que ça. Puis je pense qu'au niveau mondial, c'est vraiment des choses qui sont en train de changer, là, les législations puis les lois antiterroristes qui s'affairent aux anarchistes. Fait que je pense que l'intention avec ça va être d'apporter une espèce de descriptif de la situation qui se passe là-bas, de parler un peu de Francisco puis Manico, de parler un peu du contexte historique aussi. Puis, dans le fond, nous, ce qu'on veut faire avec ça, c'est essayer de ramasser des fonds pour pouvoir supporter nos camarades qui sont en prison. Donc, c'est ça l'idée, dans le fond, c'est qu'on ne veut pas supporter des gens sans. Mais on ne veut pas demander aux gens de supporter des gens sans savoir c'est quoi la situation. Donc, on veut expliquer un peu qu'est-ce qui se passe là-bas pour que les gens décident s'il y a plus ou non.
Est-ce qu'il y aura les autres événements comme ça dans le futur?
Oui, c'est notre but. En fait, le mois prochain, on aimerait ça faire un événement sur trois camarades anarchistes au Mexique, qui sont en lutte là-bas aussi, pour parler un peu de leur situation. Puis notre but, dans le fond, ce serait de faire ça de manière mensuelle, puis aborder différentes situations là, dans différents pays, puis de camarades anarchistes, là, de comme apporter leur lutte dans notre contexte à nous, là.
Et c'est quoi les détails? C'est où l'événement et c'est quand?
Ah, l'événement, c'est le 22, vendredi, qui s'en vient. Aujourd'hui, à la Déferle, c'est au 1407 sur la rue Valois. C'est dans Hochelaga. Puis le métro le plus proche, c'est le métro Joliette.
Ok. Et il y aura un dîner?
Oui, il va y avoir un souper à 18h. Puis à 19h, on va faire une courte présentation. Puis plus tard, si les gens sont intéressés, on va présenter un film qui s'appelle Caso de Bombas, dans le fond, pour parler du Caso de Bombas qui s'est passé au Chili.
Ok. Ben, c'est cool, c'est ça, c'est mes questions. As-tu les autres choses à dire?
Non, je pense que c'est ça.
Ok. Ben, merci
On se
beaucoup.
voit vendredi.
You are still listening to the Prison Radio Show here on CQUT 90.3 FM. It's 11:20 a.m. That was an interview with one of the organizers of an event that is happening tonight. To repeat the details, it's an info night and fundraiser for two anarchist prisoners in Spain. It is starting at 6 p.m. at La Défal, located at 1407 Rue Valois in Hochelaga, just south of Metro Joliette. There will be food served, and after the presentation, there will be a film screening. So next on the program here is Manicomio with De La Miseria.
Okay. Hi, this is the What Cheer Brigade, and keep it locked on
CKUT 90.3 Montreal.
We just heard De La Miseria by Manicomio. Up next is an interview with Black gay anarchist prisoner Michael Kimball, who is currently incarcerated in Alabama. Kimball is a writer and has been involved in organizing with the Free Alabama Movement inside prison. The interview was conducted by folks from the Final Straw Radio in Asheville, North Carolina. It has been edited for the Prison Radio Show here on CKUT 90.3 FM and online at CKUT.ca.
This week, we're speaking with Michael Kimball, who is a Black gay anarchist prisoner incarcerated in Atmore, Alabama. Mr. Kimball is active in many prison organizing projects, including the Free Alabama Movement, for which we've done interviews in the past. We speak about his case, his writings, a possible future for anarchist organizing, his upcoming parole hearing, and vampires, among other topics. For more about his case and to read his writings, you can visit his support page at anarchylive.noblogs.org. Apologies for the audio quality on this interview. Since it was recorded from inside prison, it's not always easy to hear. But stick with it. There's some really good stuff. We are speaking with Michael Kimball, who is a writer, musician, and anarchist currently incarcerated in an Alabama prison. Thanks for coming on the radio, Mr. Kimball.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Would you say some things about yourself and talk a little bit about your case?
Well, I'm 50 years old. I've been locked up since 86 on a murder case. I've done 29 years so far. I was supposed to go for parole this month, but I haven't been scheduled a date yet or had an interview, initial interview yet. I've been an anarchist since the mid-90s. Before that, I was a communist. I struggled with the New African People Organization, the Malcolm X grassroots movement, down for the Free Alabama Movement. It was finally here in Alabama prison system, that guy at St. Cloud prison. That's about it.
Word. Would you talk about some of the projects that you work on? Would you talk about working on the Free Alabama Movement and tell us about what that is?
Well, the Free Alabama Movement, it was formed to address the lengthy sentences that we received in Alabama prisons, mainly life without a life sentences. What we try to do, we try to organize prisons to go on work strike to bring pressure on the legislative system down here in Alabama, try to change laws, make them a little bit more lenient. But personally, I just joined the Free Alabama Movement to bring pain to the state of Alabama any kind of way I can. This avenue that we have right now.
You're a writer, and you've written a bunch about your political development from communism to anarchism. Could you talk about how that happened? You said you were an anarchist since the 90s?
Yeah, since the mid-90s, about 94, 95, somewhere around there. I saw communism as addressing the problems of black people and people in general, and it spoke to my dilemma that I would have, and these are the people that embraced me. So after a few years, after reading a lot of other stuff, then stuff from Blue City Bay anarchist group in Baltimore, Milwaukee, I started doing a lot of reading and started bringing into question some of the things that I hear to be true, that I found out wasn't true, that I was being controlled and dominated through all my life, even from a child, from my family, in the school, the neighborhood, on up to the day when I came to anarchism. I've been an anarchist ever since. I've been going hard.
Because you do a bunch of prison organizing, in addition, the Free Alabama Movement, in addition to other things. Would you talk a little bit about your experiences about organizing in prison and how your sexuality influences how you organize?
Yep. Well, if you're being gay, it's complicated in prison because prison is a super macho environment. And being gay, that's like being on the totem pole in class, society, in prison. And you really have to have a long record for organizing for guys to accept you. You have to be a witness what they call being real in the face of administration. So that kind of makes it a little bit more easier for me. And it's hard because being an anarchist and trying to organize horizontal instead of hierarchy, it's a problem because the majority of the guys, they're coming through an Islamic group or coming through gangs that have a hierarchical structure. And when you try to bring it to them without a hierarchical structure, you run into problems. But I think guys are getting over that now. From the last shutdown work strike we had, it wasn't organized on the hierarchy structure. It was just spontaneous. I believe that right now, that would get it spontaneity. But it's hard organizing prison because you got different people with competing interests. You got the drug dealers, you got the gang members, you know, and they got their own interests they're trying to protect. They don't want the prison to be shut down because that'll slow the drugs coming in. So they being opposition, so you have to deal with them And what you try to do, they try to get the gang leaders, try to build some kind of repertoire with the gang leaders who have the influence that they can tell their members to stand down and to go along with the work strike. But it's been hard, though. It's been a couple of fist fights behind it.
Are there many other anarchists in Atmore where you're at?
Well, there's two more here, one in population and one in segregation for attempt to escape. Them the only two that I know of. Matter of fact, I haven't met number three since I've been locked up, my whole family locked up. You normally don't catch many, especially black anarchists. Yeah. The other two, they are white, but you don't catch many black anarchists.
Are there struggles that are going on in the Alabama prisons right now that are exciting to you?
Well, the exciting struggle that's going on now, they basically at St. Clair, where they're organized retaliatory teams against the police that are being very brutal up there. So that's exciting. We're trying to get some organized down here at home or something like that. But, you know, Holman and St. Clair, two different prisons, situated different places, built different, designed different, ran by a different administration. The administration here is not as physically brutal as it is at St. Clair, but they still brutal, especially in the lockup unit. So we're trying to organize some on them terms. That's a retaliatory. Organized.
I've been hearing I've been reading your blogs and hearing about some prison riots that have happened recently in St. Clair and some hunger strikes that are going on. So,
yeah, it's a lot going on, but it's going on at different prisons, and I don't have contact into all the prisons like I need. I mainly have contact at St. Clair, so I keep up with a lot of what's going on at St. Clair. The news that they hear is going on at West Jefferson or some other prison. They notify me of, but that's where the real struggle is going on right now, basically at St. Clair.
Mm-hmm.
And December 1st, we were planning on shut down December 1st. They were having a new warden come here named Davenport, who was at St. Clair, that was arrested at St. Clair for beating prison. So they were going to shut down here. The first day he got here was December 1st, but when he came, he didn't come. He probably came with the riot team and shut the camp down, but none of this didn't take place, so nothing happened. So everything just been going on as normal.
So you've written on a super wide variety of topics, from like trans solidarity to observations on how prison functions to thoughts on like general solidarity. And incidentally, your writing has been collected in a book entitled Anarchy Live, The Writings of Anarchist Prisoner Michael Kimball, which you can see at the anarchylive.noblogs.org website. Would you talk about how you got into writing?
Well, I was forced into writing. I was being in segregation a lot and receiving newspapers and stuff like that. And people asking me to write my thoughts. So I just tried and continued to write. Even though I really don't like writing, but I do it sometimes. I guess you can say it's therapy sometimes.
Yeah,
for
sure.
Put your thoughts down. The only problem I have, I just be having so many conflicting thoughts be going on in my head at one time. It's hard for me to write. So what I have to do, I have to write like a paragraph at a time. I guess you say put it on like clothes, put it all together. And I really don't like writing.
Gotcha, but it's.
And I do. I wrote for so many years. You know, I say probably about 26, 27 of them. And it'd be like, what can I say that can have an impact that somebody hadn't already said expressed? So that where my dilemma come in at. Recently, I had took me a break from writing, but now I'm just not starting back to write. I just wrote a little piece for the Black December. I just did a little piece for that. It really wasn't that worthwhile, but they asked me to write something, so I wrote something based on strategy.
Is there something that you like to do more than writing? I read on your website that you're a musician, too.
Yeah, well, I'm more of a producer. I do a lot of music with guys. The guy gave me time in the chapel on Rastafarian time. Nice. And we just go in there and jam out, get the guitar, the keyboard, and the drums, a CD with some music on it, and sing and rap, mm-hmm. Do poetry, spoken word. Do a little program, have a little event, like somebody get their GED or something. We'll have an event for them for getting their GED, reward them for getting their GED. Do like history programs, Kwanzaa programs, Black August programs, do seminars on legal matters. We do a host of stuff down there. We only have Friday from 1 to 2 once a week, but we try to get much as we can in. And of course, we talk about the Free Alabama Movement, what we're trying to do there. And of course, I bring anarchic to people, but I have to bring it in a way because majority of people don't even, haven't even heard the word anarchy. And when they do hear it, they just think about chaos. You know, that's what they get from mainstream media. So, them some of the things that I be doing. But I don't play any instrument myself. I mess around with the bass sometimes, but I'm not really any good at them. So I just do a lot of more making beats on the computer and trying to record some of these guys.
To go back to your writing, I know you said you don't really like writing, but it's just something that you feel like you need to do. But I was really interested in your piece about prisoner support, and also some statements that you've made about attacking society being synonymous with and like needing to encompass attacking the prison system. Could you talk a little bit about these two things?
Yeah, for the prison system. I don't, like I was saying about the Free Alabama Movement, I don't believe that we can really bring about any real changes through legislature, through the legal system. Only way I think we can bring about changes through lifting struggle and building what we, I guess what you call dual power out in society, and for attacking the prison system and coming with genuine solidarity support that. We gotta take it up a notch. So I'm thinking that, you know, demonstrations outside the prison, maybe in front of in the neighborhood, some of these correction officers and commissioners, some of these prison, some of these companies that invest inside the prison, I believe we should attack them at their place of business for the business office, disrupting business meetings, along with what the guys in here can do. Which is very limited for what we can do in here. So it's going to take a lot of people on the outside. And another thing with this is that people need to start building the relationships up with guys in prisons, not necessarily anarchists, but prison rebels across the board. Because there are way more prison rebels than it is anarchists in prison system. But I think that what we have to do, we have to take it up a notch. And I think, you know, in mercy in society, we're visible because anarchists normally, they're not visible enough. And people see them, they only come out when it's a riot or something like that, when I think we should be out there organizing in the communities. Take Alabama, for example. We got 25,000 prisons. That means that 25,000 family members, friends, or something that can be touched. So maybe like on a visiting day in the parking lot, people can be down here, talk to the visitors, explain things, what's wrong with the prison system, why it's not broken, why it's working perfectly, and it's designed to work the way it's working.
Could you talk a little bit more about folks who are wanting to get more into prisoner support about like how they should approach doing that? I was specifically interested in what you had to say about not valorizing people in prison, because like people just don't want to have like adoration. They just want to have normal interactions. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that has been a problem in the past, especially with this political prison of war issue. Not saying they shouldn't get support, but we put them on a pedestal where we make prisoners into the vanguard, and we're trying to stay away from vanguards. People on the outside, they even though they haven't been in prison experience, but their idea is just as valid as those are inside. And people, when they build a relationship with prisoners, that's the kind of relationship they should build. They should build on an equal basis instead of looking at the prisoner like, he should be glorified just because he in prison. You know, I think that's the wrong approach. The best approach is just come as a friend. I think people get along better that way, being friends. And I don't know about guys I just know about me, the way I see it. Now, that's one thing I love to write people, different people, hear about what's going on in different countries and different states and what they got going on with projects. Because somewhere down the line, I might be able to find something that I might be able to use, because I'm always looking for ideas. But from the support that I have been getting within the last 2 years, it's been great. I've been receiving support from all over the world. And that's something I never experienced when I was into communism. It was basically just letters back and forth talking about communism. But this one here, now I'm getting to know people. And I think that's the best approach you can have, is to get to know people and discuss different ideas and stuff. That's mainly what I've been doing. Now, the fact that me and a couple of my comrades, that we've been doing, we've been talking and dialoguing with a couple of comrades on the outside on some of these same subjects about ideas for what this support can look like and what their ideas are. And they have some good ideas, too, that we hadn't even thought of yet. Matter of fact, we just hooked up a letter, but this is going to be passed out during visiting days within a couple of weeks. During visiting day in the parking lot, some comrades, they're going to be here to pass them out and talk to the people in the parking lot on Saturday and Sunday on visiting days. Yeah, because I haven't been able to contact anybody down here in Alabama. I knew some anarchists down here a few years ago, but they were from out of state. They're not here anymore. Matter of fact, one of them had got killed, you know, on the south side of Birmingham by a skinhead. So I ain't heard that from them since then. Black Lives Matter, they've been doing some awesome work, and they trying to show the intersection, not just police brutality, police murders, but I've been reading some of their stuff where they showing the intersection between freedom and authoritarian society. So I've been kind of excited about that. Matter of fact, I just got some in the mail from Black Lives Matter. I hadn't had a chance to read it yet, but I know it's going to be good because they bring some good stuff to the table. And I think more of that need to be done in all areas besides Black Lives Matter. But Black Lives Matter, man, they got a good approach to stay in their face and keep it out there. And I think that's what you have to do. You have to keep it in people's face, whatever you're talking about, dealing with. Because like I said, you got 25,000 people locked up here. Mm-hmm. That 25,000 people, I know 25,000 people, they got a family friend or something that can get involved. We can harness all that. I believe we should never can bring some change to them. We might not bring the system down, but we can bring some change. We can bring some pain to it, because that's the whole thing I'm interested in, just bringing some pain to the system. To destroy it, ain't make no change.
Yeah, I agree. And I liked what you said before about how, like, anarchists are kind of only really visible when there's a riot or when there's, like, something like that, but we need to be more visible all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like I say, here, guys don't even know nothing about anarchists. And the majority of the ones that do, they think it's just some white movement. They never really studied it. Took the time out to look at it, and I think that made our fault
for sure
for not putting it out there like everybody else do. Got to put it out there, and I did this. They can defend themselves.
You said something at the beginning about there not being really very many Black anarchists where you're at, or like that you know of in your facility. And you just mentioned that people like think of anarchism as this white movement. Could you talk a little bit more about that, and if you have any like additional thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, they see it as white because majority of the literature you see it is written by white people, and it's very rare that you see something written by a Black anarchist. Matter of fact, I can't think of number 3-4 throughout the country just off the top of my head. Some old DLA members. Couple of old Black Panther members, that's about it. And that's another dilemma I've been having. How can I spread anarchy? I can spread it here, but how can I spread it out in a larger society? Would it take hold with people adopting the same way they adopt other philosophies and ideas. And all we have to do there, you got to hit the pavement, got to get out in the streets. Maybe, you know, like we call street teams, just like in Greece where they just throw up a whole bunch of stuff, flyers, posters, just plaster. They plaster the city with posters, leaflets, pass them out everywhere, especially on college campuses and the high schools. Set up, like I was saying, dual power, something not as a solution to the problem, but just a way of showing people how they can take control of their own lives and do for self. They don't have to depend on the state. And I think if we create something like that, people would be willing to defend that, especially if it's meeting their basic needs. I guess you could say like food, clothing, shelter, medical help, these kind of things that I think resonate out in society. Maybe we can get people up in the prison. You know, like you have all these different groups here. Mm-hmm. They get visitors in, through the church, Magic, or whatever little organization they got going, they get visitors in. So I'm saying we can do the same. It's one thing hearing from me, but it's another thing hearing from people on the outside. Y'all carry more validity than I do in here. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things that I think can be done.
I was wondering if you would talk a little bit more about your parole hearing, which is coming up pretty soon. Would you talk about how it's been to prepare for that, and if there's any additional support that you need?
Well, right now, I really don't know what's happening now. I'm assuming that they're going to set me back 6 months, saying that their caseload is full right now, so they have to set me back 6 months. That happened to me two times I went up. So like I say, normally when you go up, you'll have a date just a month in a year, and you'll have an initial hearing 60 days before that. Then they'll set you a date for that month that you had your open hearing, but I haven't received none of that. So I'm just assuming that they're going to set me back 6 months or so, because I heard and then some are already here. Yeah, but I don't see no reason why I should be denied, because I got everything that you're supposed to have. I got the trade, I got the classes and stuff like that. But, you know, Alabama don't have no criteria or statute saying you do this, you do that, you get parole. They don't have that. That's why it's been so hard to challenge it. It's based on just on the discretion of the parole board. And basically them are business owners, you know, chosen by the government.
I know that you were calling for some letters of support. Is that still something that you need?
Yeah, I still would like to have more letters of support for whenever they do come on. Give me a date. It'll be a big help. I've been up parole 7 times so far. Then, you know, they be saying violent crime, you know. It's always nonviolent that they are parole. And I'm thinking that maybe I might have had got it this time since I did so much time on it. Very few people do the kind of time that I'm doing on the life sentence. Normally 10, 12 years. Of course, you know, I had some problems since I've been here. I caught two free world cases since I've been down. Well, three in all, one of them was dismissed. So my record's not really that messed up.
I was wondering if there's any advice that you have for people who are waiting on parole hearings.
I really don't like giving out advice like that, because my parole be different every time.
Yeah.
All that I can tell a person, it just taking a day at a time through it. That's all that I can tell. But that's all it is. Same thing every day, day after day.
So the next question, I only have a few more questions. The next one is, how would you like to see anarchist organizing change in the future? You've spoken a lot about like how you'd like to see it grow, but I wonder if you have any more thoughts on that.
I'm thinking that it can grow. As a matter of fact, I'm seeing it grow. I think that with the Greek initiative, I think they're having a lot of influence over here in the West. But I think the West, what they got to do, they got to, like I said, they got to just amp up the ante. You know, they got to hit them streets. They got to get out there like the Greeks. We got to create some spaces where some free zones. Like I was saying about the the street teams, that definitely will make it grow.
So I was reading on your site about the things that you like and the things that you like to read, and I hear that you like vampire books, and I was wondering which ones are your favorite.
I'm not sure you're familiar with Ryan Lumley. He do a series called Necroscope series. Yeah, I find vampires fascinating. In my own way, I kind of identify with them, too. They hate it by society. They're not even accepted among their own, for real. You know, I feel the same way. Even though I've been here a long time, mm-hmm. I'm really not accepted by a lot of these people. Not totally. So I know vampires got to feel alone living all those years and not being able to find a life partner or anything like that that will function normally in society. So I identify with the vampires.
Thank you so much again. It was lovely talking to you. I hope you have a really good rest of your day.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
And that was an interview here on the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM with Michael Kimball, brought to you by The Final Straw in Asheville, North Carolina. To learn more about Michael and to read his writings, you can check out anarchylive.noblogs.org. You can also write to Michael at Michael Kimball. That's KIMBLE, number 138017. 3700 Holman Unit in Altmore, Alabama, postal code 36503. And so again, this is Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and CKUT.ca on the web. We are winding down towards the end of our show. We're going to play a song by Camilo Solo called Precioso, and then we have a few announcements for you, and then you'll want to stay tuned for Butcher T's Noontime Cuts coming up next at noon.
Ser deseoso.
Precioso by Camila Solo here on CQT 90.3 FM. This has been another episode of the Prison Radio Show. Today is January 22nd, the International Day in Solidarity with Trans Prisoners. It's the first annual Trans Prisoner Day of Action and Solidarity, and there is going to be an event here in Montreal on Tuesday, January 26th at Café Ouvert, located on Zulit, 611 Zulit Est. There is going to be a film screening of Cruel and Unusual, which was produced in 2006. There are also going to be some presentations from members of the Prisoner Correspondence Project, who we had on the air last week. So the Trans Prisoner Day of Action Solidarity, it's a grassroots project initiated by Marius Mason, who is a trans prisoner in Texas. And so it's an annual event led by trans prisoners and their supporters. It's a chance for those on the outside to remember those behind bars and offer solidarity and support and raise awareness about issues facing trans prisoners. So again, thanks for listening. You can check out our blog at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Prison Radio Show. The Prison Radio Show airs twice a month on CQT. We're on the air on the second Thursday of the month at 5 p.m. and the fourth Friday at 11 a.m. The next Prison Radio Show will air on Thursday, February 11th at 5 p.m. If you have any questions on anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved in the program, you can contact us at prison@cqt.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. Folks can leave a message on our listener comment line at 514-448-4041. Again, that's 514-448-4041, extension 2547. If you are in prison, we encourage you to participate in the show in any way possible. You can write to us at the Prison Radio Show, or simply PRS, care of CKUT, 3647 University Street in Montreal, Quebec. Postal code H3A2B3. Thank you again for tuning in this week. My name is Candace, and I've been your host for your show today. Stay tuned here to CQT 90.3 FM.